Good evening, everyone.
So we're going to be starting in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Vav. Now, this is a Pasuk that is really quite difficult simply to translate because it talks about items of largesse, of wealth, and that sort of thing that really are outside of our world. Let alone world view. So you'll notice the way I did it on the sheet is that I broke it up to make it as understandable as possible. Because I guarantee you that if you ask most people, including most Israelis, what does the phrase Chur Karpas mean? Okay? What's that about? So it's a very difficult phrase. Techelet, we can deal with. Argaman, we can deal with, because these are words that are used in the binyan of the Ohel Moed, right? In the Mishkan, okay? But many of the words are very, very odd. So let's go a little bit slowly here. So at least when you hit it, even if you only remember one or two words, when you hear the Megillah, because usually it goes so fast anyway, but even if you only hear one or two words, you'll know, oh, I know what that's talking about a little bit. So, Chur Karpas means spreads of white fine cotton. Now, you have to remember that the majority of people, okay, looked not exactly in terms of the fashion, but they looked like they were the poor people from Les Mis. Okay, it was very coarse cloth, okay, sort of almost harsh. So fine cotton was something that was very, very valuable. And I would imagine, although I don't know this for sure, but being a Land's End customer for many years, probably the fine cotton came from Egypt. Because that's one of the places where cotton is grown in the Middle East. So it was this very, very fine thread cotton. Okay, and these were the spreads. Now, utechelet, achuz, okay, and techelet is blue. It's like, so you have techelet in tzitzit, ideally. I mean, not everyone does today. That's a huge halakhic question because it needs to be from a particular aquatic animal that's found in the Mediterranean. And the question is, do we know which one that really is? There are those poskim who say we absolutely do. So you'll see sometimes people with tzitziot and there will be a blue thread. But at any rate, it's blue. So let's go to something that we know for sure.
If you have the wrong blue, is that like a big...
So that's a good question. If you have the wrong blue, is it as if you have no blue? That's what some people would say. So in other words, there may not be any downside to it, okay, in terms of the tzitzit whatsoever. But then the question is, if it's not authentic, is that something you'd want to wear? That would be really part of the question. So just because it might be right doesn't mean that necessarily, you know, is right. But again, there's volumes and volumes. I mean, I would imagine almost a bookcase like you're looking at here. Okay? But there's a better way to think about it. Chazal, that's very definite. Chazal tell us that Techelet is the blue of the sky. Okay? And it may well be, by the way, one of the reasons why the flag of Medinat Yisrael is blue and white is it goes all the way back to this. Okay? So, at any rate, Techelet, there's going to be blue. Now, but obviously blue has to be on something. So it's achuz, it's embroidered, okay, bechavle boots. So with sort of strands or cords, okay, of boots and argaman, of linen and purple. So imagine like the fanciest, schmanciest kind of not really garment, but claws. And they're hanging everywhere. Okay, and if that wasn't enough, I mean, talk about over the top. Aglile right? Glile kesef, on silver rods. Okay? It's like sometimes imagine the fanciest affair you could ever imagine and sort of like exponentially keep going with it. That's what this was like. Okay? Now, and amudei shesh, that's easy. That we can all relate to. Those are pillars of marble. And we know what marble looks like. Now, then you have mitot zahav v'kesef. You have beds of gold and silver, meaning what? That there were gold legs and the base of it was silver. And then on top of that, there'd be some sort of mattress, which obviously didn't look like just a mattress. It had all these different things beautifully laid out on it. Okay? And if that wasn't enough, talk about, in quotation marks, over the top, Ritzbat Bahat Vishesh Vidar Vesocharet, or Socheret, excuse me. So it was on a pavement of green, white, shell, and onyx marble. Okay, so can you imagine what this scene must have been like? I mean, it was just unbelievable. So basically, when you hit that pasuk, so you can just stay focused on whatever there was to demonstrate wealth that could not walk away without being seen. Okay? I mean, because you could have said, well, why didn't Ahasuerus just put out gold coins and silver coins and so forth? And that answer is pretty obvious, right? Or diamonds and so forth. So this was a way that he could demonstrate his unbelievable wealth in a way that it would not, you know, let your fingers do the walking through the yellow pages. Okay? Okay. Next, v'hashkod b'klei zahav v'cheilim mikeilim shonim. Okay, and they were given to drink from golden vessels and vessels mikeilim shonim. Now, literally, it would mean different types. We're going to see how that eventually comes out as meaning old, not shonim, as meaning different, but shanim is like yishanim, old, in which cases you've all heard for many, many years, it refers to the clay Beit HaMikdash. Okay, v'yayin malchut rav, and there was a great deal of wine available, k'yad hamelech, according to the king's pleasure. Okay, that's how I would translate all this. Now, with that, let's take a look and see how Rashi and Chazal deal with this, okay? V'hashkot b'klei zahav, okay? And so Rashi says, well, what does that really mean? It's an odd formulation grammatically. I use the expression, they were given to drink, okay? And that's why Rashi says, l'hashkot, which is the infinitive form, literally, to drink. So in other words, and I then suggest that it means really, and they were given to drink from these kinds of vessels. Shonim. Now, remember I said to you, shonim means like different. So in a little bit more sophisticated English, we'd say differentiated one from another. And that's how Rashi looks at it in the Hebrew. It says, mishunim zemezeh. Okay? That each vessel was different from the other. Each one was more beautiful than the other. Okay, and we also have the idea of the chain, right? And so too, it says, I believe in the Megillah itself, Adatehem Shonot. And they're different religions. They're different approaches. Okay, remember, this was a real rainbow society that Ahasuerus was the king over. 127 countries, unbelievable number of religions, polytheistic, in almost all cases except for us. We were the only monotheists of the time. Now, and then Rashi says, interestingly enough, V'rabotenu darshu masha darshu. So I've told you what I think the pshat is, and then Rashi says, and Chazal had their view. Okay, they darshaned it in a different way, and again, we're going to see the classic way of understanding. Okay, then v'yayin malchut rav. So what does that mean? So rav means a lot. Rav is similar to the word of rov. Okay, so by the way, you'll have the idea in rabbinic literature of rabbo. So rabbo could mean his rabbi. Also, if the person we're talking about is an eved, it could mean his master. Because the master is usually someone certainly who has a whole lot more than the eved. So that's what the idea here of rav means, harbe, a lot. Okay, v'rabotenu amru shehishka'otam kol echad v'echad yayin shehu zaken mimenu. And our sages tell us, right, that each of them were given to drink wine that was older than they were. And we're going to see what that means. So what are you and I used to? Maybe we have sometimes we have wine that's not aged at all, right? So most of the time, I say our Kiddush wine. So it's 2016, so at the most of the time, you're going to drink a wine from 2014, 2015. Okay, and that's already something that you would notice in terms of a price. But that's, wait till you see what we see in a moment in terms of aged wine, and you're not going to almost believe it. Okay, so that's the first part. That's Rashi. Let's see how Esther Rabbah, the Medrash, deals with it. So we have Kelim Mikelim Shonim. So this is fascinating, especially in light of the PowerPoint, or it really was a PDF that I showed you last week. Everybody now knows where Elam is, right? So we know that it's a little north west of where Shushan was, right? So you need that to understand what we're going to do now. So he says this. So what happened? What kind of kelim were these, according to the Medrash? So Havi Kalev, he brought out his vessels, Uklei Elam, and also the vessels from Elam. V'nimsu Shelo Yafim Mishel Elam. And we see, and he found out, and everybody could see, that his vessels were better than the vessels of Elam. Now, Elam, remember, was no small sheikhs. It was one of the sophisticated areas of the world. But his were better. Now, you ready? Here's the source for the famous vort that all of us know. And that's why we read this pasuk according to the Trapa of Megillat Eicha. Hevi Kalev Uklei Beit HaMikdash. But when Ahasuerus brought out his kelim and the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, v'nimsa'u na'im v'yafim mikelav, then indisputably and unmistakably so, the clay Beit HaMikdash were far more beautiful than even his kelim. Okay? Now, here's a interesting mashal that I think you're all going to appreciate, that's brought down in the Medrash. So basically, imagine in your mind that next to the word matrona, now matrona is obviously Latin, and the word is that you and I are familiar with is matron. That's what matrona is, okay? So imagine that before this word, la matrona, the word was la mashal. So let me explain what this could be similar to, says the Medrash. L'matrona, to a sophisticated, fancy, aristocratic woman, who, in my opinion, quite foolishly, shahayetala shifcha yafa, she had among her servants a beautiful maidservant. Okay? So you already know where this is going. Kol zman shema betet b'shifchata, all the time that she would look at his beautiful maidservant, hayu paneha mishtanot, her face would crinkle and turn. You know, she'd turn up her nose and she'd be all bothered. So, of course, you know, when I'm reading this, I'm saying to myself, and the reason you brought her into your house was? But, okay. But now we know. This is what we're looking at. Kach kol zaman shehayu klei beit hamikdash mabitin bekeilav. So too, all the time. And of course, this is an anthropomorphization. We're saying when the klei hamikdash would look at the kelim of Achashverosh. Oh, hayu mishtanim kelav. Okay, then it's the equivalent of Achashverosh's kelim changing the naasin ka'oferet and becoming as if they were nothing other than lead. Okay, so it gives you a sense of how beautiful the klei hamikdash were. And it also raises a lot of questions like, excuse me, you had Jews at a party along with everybody else where they're actually serving in the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash? Big problem. And you saw this last week, right? We asked why were they punished and so on and so forth. Okay, so please turn to page 2. Now, this is an interesting source. It's an agadic source that you don't usually see, but through the glory of the responsa program from Bar Ilan, you can come up with all kinds of fascinating midrashim, and this is one of them. And you'll see that Rashi's comment is very similar to this. Now, do I think for a minute that Rashi had Sifri the Agadata al Esther? No, I'm quite sure he didn't have it. Okay, but obviously this is an idea that was within the Weltanschauung of Chazal, and Rashi had heard that. All right, so let's see what this was. And this is a very, again, very similar, but it goes into a further explanation about what we meant by the kind of wine that was there, which is why, in comparison to our Kiddush wine, it's going to be pretty fascinating. V'yayin malchut rav ki yad ha-melech. Okay. So, hayayin haya gadol, okay, mishotav. The wine was older than the person who was drinking it. Okay, I mean, even if you're dealing with a 15-year-old and he's drinking 20-year-old wine, I don't have to tell you what 20-year-old wine would cost. But we're going to go further than that. Look what it says. Im haya adam gadol. If there was a person who was a true adult, omrim lo, then the servants would say to him, ben kama shanimata, how old are you? And then, I'm not kidding, amale, well, remember the women weren't there.
Saying,
women fine. Were by the, because they would never tell their age,
exactly.
So they'd wind up drinking soda pop. So amale, ben arbaim shanani. So he'd respond, oh, I'm 40 years old. So you already know where this is going now. So then, unbelievable, you know, you're dealing with thousands and thousands of people. Then, hayu notnim lo, then they would give him yayin ben chamishin shana. They'd give him 50-year-old wine. Now, 50-year-old wine in our day and age, I don't know a lot about wine. But if 12-year-old scotch puts you back, you know, $60, let's say, a bottle. Can you imagine 50-year-old wine? That must be in a $300, $400, $500, depending on the wine. So lekach ne'amar. Therefore, it says in the pasuk, v'yayin malchut rav kiyad hamelech. In other words, the same kind of wine that the king would drink, he was giving out to the parvenu, to all the poor people, or to those who were less than him, all in an effort to prove how mighty and powerful he was. Okay? Now, I know that many of you are thinking, and I think it's a legitimate idea, why would he demonstrate such over-the-top largesse? Okay? Well, there's several reasons. One, wealth equals power. That's probably the most upfront reason. Two, you don't have to be Freud or any other psychologist to realize he's showing off. Why does he show off? because he's essentially very insecure. Because if you're insecure, that's why you would need to blast to the world who and what you are. But if you're secure in who you are, you don't have to do that. So as I always like to say, anybody who says to you, it's a pleasure for you to have met me. When you meet such a person, what do? You run the other way. Because it's anything but, right? Who needs to meet someone that's that insecure? So I think there's these two reasons he's demonstrating such absurd amount of wealth, okay? All right.
Wasn't it also like because he thought that, you know, we said this last week, that we thought that he thought that the Gula would never come. So therefore he's thinking he's God and he's, you know...
We said that last week.
Yeah, that's what
good
I'm
point.
So that's what he's doing here. He's showing he's God.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, quote unquote, I think it's an old Mel Brooks line, it's good to be the king. Mm-hmm. Right? And here, okay, he's not the king of one or two countries, king of 127, so you could be right. Good, right? And also, again, as we said last week, let's not give him a free pass. It isn't that Haman was evil and Ahasuerus was some sort of easily influenced individual. But remember, Ahasuerus, as I showed you last week, right? Without a doubt, within Chazal's view, okay, whether or not he was particularly intelligent and or he was only shrewd, he still was not a good person.
But then again, Paro thought he was God too.
He did.
But he didn't make parties. He just, you know, beat everybody up.
We did have a birthday party. The first birthday party that's mentioned in entire Tanakh is Paro's birthday.
Oh.
It is there, explicitly. It's not a chazal. Okay? And as a friend of mine once said, could have been one of my chavruses, who was also a friend of mine, but he said, and this is why we make birthday parties? I don't think so. So,
all right. We always say you should celebrate the mom, not the kid.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
That's correct.
I always say that every year.
Okay. That's well, the mother should be the one, right? Because she's put up with you for that long.
She all right. Birth.
That, I, whatever I say or do at this moment is not a good idea. Okay. Vahashtia kadat. Okay, the drinking, Pasuk Zayin, was according to the particular... religious orientation, right? Because it's dat. Dat means religious orientation. It might also be translatable as approach, social mores. Okay, there's a variety of things you could do contextually. But at any rate, ein ones. Nobody was forced. And that's very, very important. So the fact that you have Jews... involved extensively with non-Jews and they're drinking wine and some of the kelim that are being used are clay Beit HaMikdash, you really get a sense of the problematics that obtained at this particular Seuda. Okay? Alright. Ki Kain Yisad HaMelech. Okay? So, for this is what the king had established for the Mishartim, for his servants. Okay, I'll call Rav Beito. Okay, for everybody who was a Misharet, who was on a high level within his house. Okay, La'asod kirtzon ish ve'ish, that everybody should do according to what each person wanted. Okay? Now, Talmud Bavli has some very interesting takes on this. Okay? Vashtia kadat. So the obvious question that all of us would say is, what do you mean the drinking was according to the religion? So the Gemara asks, my kadat. What do we mean when we say it was kadat? Do we take it at face value? Is that what it means? So here we have an answer. Amar Rabbi Chanan, Mishem Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Chanan said in the name of Rabbi Meir, Kedat Shel Torah. Well, That's what it means, because that's what that means. Okay, it means religion. So it was they drank in the way that we do according to the Torah. So what does that mean? Madat shel Torah, just like the law or the more in this case of the Torah is achila merupa mishtia. You're supposed to eat more than you drink. Okay, unlike what happens in other cultural milieu, right? So af sudato shel Torasha. So too, this meal of this evil individual. Okay, so again, over and over again, Ahasuerus is called a Rasha. Achila merupa mishtia. So too, even there, that was followed. Okay? Now, it's an interesting take. Okay? You're not necessarily forced to say that. So this, and again, when we're going to the Gemara here, none of this has immediate halakhic reference. So if it fits for you, that's fine. If you have a different take, that's also fine. Okay? So Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer said, what does ein ones, nobody was forced, malame chikal echad v'echad, hishkehu miyayin medinato. It's coming to teach us that each and every person drank of the wine from his country. So let's say a person was a Parthian, Parthian. That was one of the areas in the Middle East at the time. So in that area, they would have their own wine. So if, and you in all likelihood weren't used to wine from anywhere else, so it wouldn't taste the same. So you'd want your country's wine. Okay, so Enonis, nobody was forced to drink, let's say, wine from Egypt or Phoenicia, right? If they lived from somewhere and they hailed from some other area. Okay, which is an interesting way to look at it. I mean, of course, Pshat Enonis is what? Nobody was forced to drink, but people voluntarily did so with apparently a lot of gusto. Okay, La'asod kiritzon ish v'ish. Now, what's going to be said here, I never, ever in a million years could say on my own. It's so fascinating. So you notice, ish v'ish. So how would you normally translate la'asod kiritzon ish v'ish? To do it in accordance with the will of each and every individual, right? Kol echad v'echad. But what the Gemara is going to do, and particularly Rava, is going to say, wait a minute, it says ish and ish. It's mentioned two people. And he's going to then say, are there any instances in the rest of the Megillah where we have ish and ish? So before we even look inside, who wants to answer that? So how do we describe Mordechai? Right? It's one of the psukim that we repeat aloud. What is that? Ishuhudi. There is one ish. Okay? And how does Esther describe Haman? As ish, right? Something like ish harasha or something like that. So there's one ish, the second ish. So who were the people that were serving the wine according to Rava? Mordechai and Haman. I can't make this up. Look what he says. Not according to Rava. Because look what he says. La'asod kiritzon Mordechai v'Haman. They were working together. Okay? So is there a medrash that says that Mordechai refused to go and be there? Absolutely. Can you have more than one medrash? And often do we have midrashim that disagree? Absolutely. And then, of course, comes the famous question. Rabbi, what's the truth?
But I thought that's what he got rewarded was because he protested and he didn't partake and all that stuff.
Look what Rava says. Rava says that he was not only was he there, but he was serving on behalf of Ahasuerus. And he was serving with Haman. It's an amazing medrash, right? If I would say that on my own, you know, I could.
This is the opposite of everything I've ever learned.
Correct. And nonetheless, it's straight Gemara. You don't have to be the Chacham from the Manishtana. That's what it says. Because how do you know Mordechai was one of the Anashim, one of the times where it says Ish, Dichtiv, Ishuhuti? How do you know Haman was the other? Ish Tsar V'Oyev. Who said that? Esther. So, therefore, as strange as it sounds, who were the servers at the Suda? Mordechai and Haman. They were the head Sarei Mashkim. Interestingly enough, right? Who would imagine? Okay? And by the way, you all know that Rava was one of the greatest of all the Talmidei Chachamim in the Gemara. So if he says it, it's at least interesting. Now, by the way, does it mean you have to accept it? No. Because it's what? It's a garata. Halacha is one thing, a garata is another. So you don't have to, if it bothers you that much.
It's not a bother, but it's just that, you know, all these years you taught one thing and now
right.
Complete opposite.
Okay, so you've ever seen light shining through a diamond?
No, I'm not that.
Okay, well,
chandelier prism, science class.
Okay, well, if you do, or you have, okay, and you'll see the light goes in many different directions because there's many facets to the diamond. Okay, so that's really what Torah is about, especially when it comes to the egotic nature of Torah. There isn't one way. It isn't my way or the highway. There's a variety of different approaches that can be followed. And this is one of them. And I understand that you found it amazing. One of the reasons why you found it amazing is that I remember the first time I saw it when I was doing Daf Yomi. And what I said to the Chavrusa I was learning with, I said, come on, that can't be right. It's against everything else I've ever learned. So I know how you feel. All right, next.
This is why girls need to learn Gemara, because you learn it one way and you're just not exposed to
right.
Different ideas.
Right, and maybe, okay, so whether or not girls, quote unquote, need to learn Gemara and so forth. I mean, I'm on this side, of course, that says that women certainly may learn Gemara. Absolutely so. My Rebbe followed that very strongly. Must they learn Gemara? I don't think anybody would say that, including
no,
Rav Soloveitchik himself.
Teachers I've had, I don't think were aware of this.
I would imagine not.
Give you one straight.
That's right. What I'm saying. It's like, this is, you know.
Right. But this, see, that's the beauty of it. See, here's what I always also say. If the Torah was one way, I don't think we'd be here today. Right? Then it would have become like Lahavdi Lafavdala, like a catechism. Right? That this is Orthodox with a small O, because the word Orthodox with a big O wasn't invented till the 19th century. But if someone would say, this is Orthodox dogma, okay, and it's this way and no other, I don't think the Torah would have survived. I really just don't see it. That's why there isn't anything, whether it's halakhic or agadic, that doesn't have multiple views. You got to come out to the psak. But there's no such thing as a psak and a garata, right? I mean, I can't say la'asol kirtzon ish v'ish that this is talking about the Rangers game, okay? That's absurd, that's ridiculous. It's not even funny because it's too ridiculous, right? But I could say, well, maybe it's talking about this, because I am not duty-bound to accept that. So if you want to be in your dalet amos of what you learned, then that's where you're at. Okay, goes into hate. No one's going to say it's wrong. All right, let's go weiter. So now on to the scene comes Vashti. So Vashti is somebody you and I have all met. It's nearly every starlet and celebrity in Hollywood today. That's who Vashti was, okay? And the same kinds of behaviors. I'm not even going to honor any of them by using a name, What, for one reason, you can say, how do you know about her? Okay, I don't blame you. And on the other hand, when I'm surrounded by Nishei Chayil and Sifrei Kodesh, why should I mention one of their names? Because you know what we're talking about, right? I don't have to say more, right? We understand how they live. So, but that's who Vashti is. So it's not like there's no Vashti in our day and age. The problem is nearly everybody's a Vashti, okay? So, Gam Vashti Hamalka, also, Vashti the queen.
Undo it.
How do you undo this? Oh, cell phone. Okay.
Did they turn off the light?
It looked like there was a blackout.
Oh. There you go.
Okay. There we go. So,
see, you need my light?
So let's go back to that. So Gam Vashti Amalka, also Vashti the queen, Asata Mishte Nashim, she made a drinking party, because that's what Mishte means, right? She made her own drinking party, Beit Hamalchut, right? In the house of the kingship, Asher LeMelech Achashverosh, that was to Melech Achashverosh. Now, at first, if you wanted to be Melanid Zachut, you would say, well, she wanted, separate seating.
I was just thinking that.
Right?
How long was her party?
It's interesting, the Megillah doesn't say exactly how long it was. We know that his was 7 days. Yeah. Was hers 7 days? I really don't know, because it doesn't say that. But could it have been? Very easily. Okay?
This is what went on, in other countries in Europe, in their courts, they would just have, days and days of feasting.
Was that the same time as the men?
Yes.
So who was watching the kids?
Well, they had slaves.
Everybody?
If you were rich enough to be there, yeah.
I thought he invited the pauper.
He invited everybody.
Right, so somebody had to be watching the kids if they're all at the party.
Okay, so
maybe they weren't paupers. Maybe they were just not of the aristocratic class.
Well,
like maybe they were the bourgeois.
Well, according to Rav Soloveitchik, it was the street people. Yeah, street people and up. Mm-hmm. So I guess whoever could make it if they didn't have babysitting chores. Okay, because obviously in those days, everybody had to babysit somehow, or because everyone had babies. But at any rate, let's see what the Gemara suggests. So, Gam Vashti Amalka Asata Mishte Nashim Beit Amalchut. Okay, so the Gemara is bothered. Okay, why does it say Beit Amalchut in the house of kingship? Beit Anashim Mebayile. It should have said instead the house of women. Right? Shouldn't say the house of the king. So Amar Rava. Rava is back again. He's your favorite Amora after what he said earlier about Mordechai and Haman. So Amar Rava. Rava was the go-to guy on all this. Shnehem. Who are the Shnehem? Achashverosh and Vashti. They were peas in a pod. Shnehem Devara Vera Nitkavnu. They both had the lowest of the low Avera planned. Hainu de Amar Inchi. This is what people say. Now, this was an old saying, okay, that the average person of the time, in let's say this is like the 4th century, would say, Ihu Bikari Vahatate Bavotsini. He uses a big gourd, and she uses a little gourd. Okay, I don't blame you if you don't know what that's talking about. Let's see what Rashi says. Botsini, deluyim ketanot. Botsini are little gourds. Klomar, deba'ot amin atzmo. Now, I don't exactly understand what's going to be said here, but I will read it authentically in terms of what the Gemara says. That with that particular min, zeno eif, vizuno efet, this one would commit unspeakable acts, meaning the man. Vazu no efet, then this one would commit unspeakable acts. Figure it out, because I wasn't sure what that meant. But that's what it says. In other words, each of them, whether it was Ahasuerus or it was Vashti, they had made the big plan. She really did want to come to the Suda, right, with nothing other than her crown on. Hu Omer, he said, Laharot et Yofia, to show off her beauty. Vehi lekach nitkavana, that she also had the same intention. Why? She was an exhibitionist. Again, she was a starlet, like those that we have today. Why? She yistaklu b'yofeha. She wanted everyone to look at her beauty. She was this big exhibitionist who wanted everyone to see her. So that's the idea that they were the same kind of evil individuals.
But you would think that back then they were more modest.
You would have thought. Again, I don't think this was taught necessarily at Beis Yaakov.
No, but I'm saying, like, you know, when you picture them, you know, in the 1800s, they wore the long dresses, and, you know, they weren't wearing the skimpy stuff they wear now, and, you know, it was a difference.
You would have thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's pretty clear that...
Even now, they don't go to parties, you know, most people don't.
Okay. Well, again, if I agree, then, again, the question would be, how do you know? And if I disagree... Then again, how do you know? So I'm in trouble no matter what I say. But the bottom line is that, let's put it this way, is that exhibitionism, the way both Ahasuerus wanted to have take place and Vashti wanted to take place, it's very, very ancient. And the behavior was such like that. So I think what we'll do here, rather than trying to rush through the next Pasuk and the Gemara, is that we'll stop here. The Gemara is fascinating on this Pasuk. So let's begin next week with Pasuk Yud. Actually, not next week. I'm sorry, in 2 weeks. Next week, I have a wedding. And so in 2 weeks from now, we will...
I'm going to leave this case, but I'll forget it.